Hello, hello, and welcome back to Art House Garage, the snob-free film community where we make art house, indie, and classic cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and today we are finishing up season 4 of the podcast, which is the Art House Starter Pack. These are 6 films designed to help the new cinephile better connect with art house films. If you've always wanted to watch more quote-unquote artsy movies, but you feel confused by them or don't know where to begin, this season is for you. Today is the final of the 6. It is Terrence Malick's 2011 masterpiece, The Tree of Life. This film is epic in its scope and poetic in its telling, and it's one of my very favorite films. So I'm very excited to dig into it with Andrew Camarillo, who is here again to finish out the season. Andrew, how are you today, and what have you been watching lately?
Hi, Andrew. Thank you. Recently, I watched The Lady Eve, a 1940s film by Preston Sturges that stars Barbara Stanwyck and Henry Fonda. It's a comedy, and it was really fun. I hadn't seen the film, so
yeah,
I enjoyed watching that.
I have not seen that before either, but I know the title, and I've heard that's, you know, a film to see from that era, and I need to check that out. Will you recommend it?
Yeah, I would say the acting is really good, but it's kind of like a screwball comedy. It was fun. I felt like it was difficult to know what was sometimes going on with the story, but it was in a fun way. Like, it was enjoyable, kind of silly. But for that time period, I think it's really good. It's sort of like His Girl Friday.
Mm, okay, yeah.
If people have seen that film. So, yeah.
That's cool. I love a screwball comedy. Speaking of comedy, the thing I was going to bring up is actually in the TV world. So I watched something recently that was not as good as something I watched that's related to it that's better that I watched a few months before that. So anyway, the TV show I watched recently is called Crashing, and it's a Netflix show. It's a British sitcom. I really like British British TV and movies, but this is, it's kind of, there's, I feel like there's sort of a subgenre of just like small stories, British sitcoms, and this is about like 20, 30 somethings and their relationship drama, basically. But it's really funny. And I watched it because it was created by and stars Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who is more famous now for her other show, which is called Fleabag, which I watched a few months ago, and I really recommend it even more than Crashing. Fleabag is, it's on Amazon Prime, so you can watch it there. But it's, I think it was originally a one-woman show, a stage play with her that she wrote and starred in. And then they adapted it into just 2 seasons of TV. It's really interesting. It's really creative. It's about relationships again. It's very funny. She's hilarious. But it's interesting because she breaks the fourth wall regularly. That's part of the show, that she is talking to us as the audience and explaining what's going on. And people can't hear her inner thoughts. She just turns to the camera, talks, and goes back to her conversation. So it's really interesting in that way. It's hilariously funny. But then season 2 especially goes to, and season 1 as well, goes to some really emotional places that I didn't expect. So anyway, I will highly recommend Fleabag. And if you really like British sitcoms, I will recommend Crashing. Those are my 2 Phoebe Waller-Bridge recommendations. She's a really creative person, and I can't wait to see what else she does. But
yeah, awesome.
There you go. Well, all right. Well, then let's get into today's movie, The Tree of Life.
There are 2 ways through life. The way of nature and the way of grace. You have to choose which one you'll follow.
We're alligators.
You'll be grown before that tree is tall.
It takes fierce will to get ahead in this world. Come on, hit me. Hit me. Come on, son.
He's afraid of you. You expect things of him only an adult can accomplish.
I've just always wanted you to be strong. Be your own man.
Father. Mother. Always you wrestle inside me. Always you will.
All right, let's talk about The Tree of Life. So yeah, this is, as I mentioned in the intro, a big movie in a lot of ways, but also small in some other ways. And I think that's that kind of paradox of it is part of why I love it so much. So I have a quote, actually. So the Criterion Blu-ray has a couple of essays. One is by Roger Ebert, and it's really great. And it's kind of focuses on the spiritual side of the film, and kind of he brings up his spiritual connection to it, which was really interesting. But then the other is by Kent Jones, and I can link to that one in the show notes. It is online. I'll see if I can find the Roger Ebert one. But he has a paragraph that I thought kind of summed up the movie. If you've never seen this before, kind of how does this, how can, it's hard to break this down into just a few sentences because it is so big. But here's what he says. He says, "What is the story of the Tree of Life? Is it the story of a cultured Texas family in the 50s, told in flashback? Is it a story of conflict between a traditionally domineering father and a radiant and compassionate mother? Is it the story of the world and human consciousness as exemplified by this mid-century American family? Or is it the story of 1 second and one day in the existence of a lost man who works in a glass office tower in which his own life, and by extension all of life, flashes before his eyes? It's all of these things, but to enumerate them doesn't begin to do justice to the experience of actually watching this film." And I like that because it does get at all the different things, because essentially the basics of the plot is there's a husband and wife at the beginning find out that one of their children has passed away. They get the news, they get a telegram, and you can tell that that's what's happened. And then it shows one of the sons grown up in his glass tower at his job in, I think, Dallas is what it seems like. And then it flashes back. And most of the movie is stories of his childhood and kind of experiencing like what life was like for him with his mother and his father and his brothers. But it also, and this is in a small Texas town, but it also kind of shows everything ever, meaning it shows the Big Bang and it shows dinosaurs and it shows like inner cell mitochondria and stuff. So it goes into all these really big places. But I'd say primarily it is the story of this family and this boy. So anyway, that's big strokes of what it is. And so I guess we can kind of just go through the film, and it might be helpful to start with kind of the visual style of it, because that was for me, the most striking thing this time. So I've seen this one time before, in 2011, I rented it because it was getting a lot of hype. And I've seen one other Malick film, and that is The New World, which is about coming to America. And I was really young when I saw that, so I don't remember too much other than it had a lot of beautiful nature, beautiful imagery of nature, which this does too. So anyway, that's kind of my relationship. Before we really get into it, Andrew, how many times have you seen this? What are your thoughts on this movie?
I don't know how many times I've seen it. Over... probably 8 to 10 times. Wow. I'm not sure, but it has been since it was shown in theaters in 2011 until now. It's not like all at once.
So you saw it in the theater several times. Yeah. Is that what that means?
I saw it in theaters a couple times, and then since then I've seen it intermittently over the last years. So it's not all just condensed to a specific time period which I saw this film, but I really enjoy the film. And for Malick, I feel like this is, we'll probably get to this later, but kind of like a new turning point or an inflection point in his filmmaking career and all of the films that have come after this film for him in the last 9 years have kind of ridden the new perspective or the way that he's making cinema in this film. So I think it's a very important film for his career, and then also in general for American cinema in the 21st century.
Yeah. I think that seems to track with everything I know about it. And I think that's true. The thing I remembered about this from the first time I watched it, which again was almost 10 years ago, so I was a different person then. But I just remember it gave me the feeling that, I guess it's sort of an existential, spiritual kind of feeling of how small I am in the universe, but also how important I am. So it made me feel small and big. that's a phrase that me and you, Andrew, used talking about Synecdoche, New York, because in a similar way, I mean, it's a very different movie, but it made me feel the sort of the expanse of everything and how big that all is, but how important human experiences are within that. And this movie does that beautifully by showing essentially all of human history, but zeroing in on this one boy and his development, really, which that, so another part of this for me now, I have kids, and I just seeing this as a father was a really different experience and really moving. I wanted to just cancel all my plans for the week and just play with my kids all week, just because it made me feel the weight of parenting. I mean, I think I'm a better dad than Brad Pitt is in this movie, but it still made me just understand in a new way. I think it's like I understand that, but this made me feel it in a way, like from my head to my heart, maybe. Anyway, so we can go on and on about that. I'm a big fan of this movie. But yeah, so on the visual style was where I was going to start was that was the most surprising thing, and maybe one of the best things about this is the way, here's another quote from that essay actually that I thought put this really well. It says, "Every distinct instant in this film feels like it's been caught or plucked from ongoing life." I think that really captures it because it almost feels like a documentary where you're just catching little snippets of things, and yet it's so carefully crafted, especially like the first, I guess the first 30 to 40 minutes is where you're getting all of the space imagery and the Big Bang and the dinosaurs and all of that. But also interspersed with some images of childhood and just beautiful shots of nature. And the way the camera is dancing around for a lot of this is really amazing. And there are some recurring images. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the cinematographer on this, Emmanuel Lubetsky, who has done a lot of work, I think, with on films like did Gravity, and also has worked with Malick on I believe another film, I can't remember which, but the like in Gravity, the sweeping motions, the poetic kind of feel of the camera, the lightless, like almost moving against the weight and just kind of like swirling and spinning around and catching the development of the children, like from a young, like from birth almost to, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. It's really, like you were saying, I agree, catching snippets of life and then piecing them together in like a documentary style, but just almost these key poetic moments, it seems.
Yeah. Almost none of the scenes have like a clear, what we expect in a movie of a clear beginning, middle and end kind of thing. But they just kind of pick up in the middle of something and you figure it out. And yet it all comes together to be something really cohesive. Yeah. So what do you make of, I guess, so that opening intro section? So we do first find out the bad news, and we see some really beautiful shots of Jessica Chastain and then Brad Pitt in this forest area. And we sort of get to know them a little bit, but then it kind of zooms back and see a lot of outer space stuff. And then we see a lot of, sort of evolution of creatures on planet Earth. And then, then it does have some what seems like microscopic, like cellular things happening too, all with this beautiful classical music. And there's a few specific images that I made note of. But what do you have thoughts about just kind of that section of the film?
That section of the film, it seems to be, for me, a response in some way to the question that the mother is asking of, like, why did this happen? Where were you? Like, when she finds out that her son has died, I think at the age of 19. And it's this questioning of that kind of goes back to the beginning of the film when we see, a scripture. I'm not sure. Do you have that, Andrew?
It's Job 38:4-7. And I can read that. It says, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy?"
Right. Yeah. So it seems to be hearkening back to this, where when she has the question, it's like the answer is this massive kind of grandiose telling of the history of the cosmos and the kind of breadth and reach of the cosmos. And the song, the classical music going on in the background, I believe, is a song called Lacrimosa, which I believe is is a mourning song, like a song mm-hmm. of grief and mourning, and it's very powerful. And Malick worked with the visual effects director Douglas Trumbull, I believe, mm-hmm. who worked on 2001: A Space Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I think that's right. Where some of the visual effects and special effects here are just incredible. Mm-hmm. The colors, the almost like crystallization on the screen of like liquids. It's mm-hmm. amazing yeah. To behold. Yeah, I think it's a great piece. I have friends of mine who don't like that sequence very much. Mm, yeah. And I think I can understand why, because seeing the children develop and grow is really amazing and wonderful in its own right. And I feel like for some people, maybe it feels like breaking up the film in some mm-hmm. way and yeah. going into something else, not showing cosmos. But for me, it puts the focus of the film in perspective of, okay, we are going to also zoom out and look at more than just this individual family, but also their place within this larger world. And I think that's our larger universe. And I think it was a good approach. There are some scenes, I think, later on in that where it may a little bit too long, but I really enjoy that Malick went there and his decision to show some of these images.
Yeah, it's surprising stuff. And you don't expect to see dinosaurs in a movie about a family in Texas in the 50s. But right. I understand that critique of it too, that it's sort of two separate things. But I think that they are woven together well. And then, yeah, I think because it is surprising, you think, why do this way? And then it kind of brings you that conclusion of, like you're saying, it's putting them in context of the whole universe, and by extension makes you right. kind of do that same thing. You know, it's interesting too, times in my life, and kind of a personal thing, just when I've gone through grief, I found myself thinking about evolution a lot for some reason. I was just kind of questioning, I think it was because my brain was going to like, why would this happen? Why would this person close mm-hmm. to me die? And it made me zoom out in that same way. So I think that's kind of interesting. But yeah, I wanted to talk also yeah. about the, well, first of all, in that sequence, there's a repeated image throughout the whole movie of some sort of, it looks like a spirit or it's like a moving shape. I think it's the first image you see after the Bible verse, and then it kind of appears here and there. My theory is that is supposed to be God or it's like, or the human spirit or something like that. That's like, this is like the essence of being whatever and I think it's ambiguous to some degree, but that was my thought. That's kind of what I pieced together. Do you have a thought on what that is?
Yeah, well, I agree. I think in general that it's some sort of spirit, mm-hmm. some representation or like image to reflect like life in some mm-hmm. way, or some spirit in the universe, maybe not directly. It feels ambiguous, yes, but it does. It shows up at the beginning and at the later in the film, and it kind of marks this spirit, kind of this like fundamental thing that's like mm-hmm. existing. And from there, the film kind of opens and closes. And I think that makes sense to me, some sort of spirit or being.
Yeah. Kind of elemental in some way, whatever it is, but yeah. But yeah, so and then from there, it does move on into kind of the family story. And it I think it does a beautiful job of showing, growing up. And the boy who's the lead, his name is Jack, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, Jack.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as he grows, he has baby brothers, so it shows him interacting with the baby for the first time, and then it shows him loving his mother so much, and then loving his father, but then there's some distance with his father because his father's a very stern military man, and later there are some sort of scenes of reconciliation there. There are some scenes of abuse, really, at his hands, and there's some... there's a scene where he's sort of discovering sexuality in an interesting way, and the you see the guilt and the shame that he feels around the feelings that he's having there. It just goes in a lot of different directions about kind of male child development, and it's really interesting, and it just like in the beginning, it kind of sweeps from section to section with a and just really gracefully. But yeah, I guess the main thing I'm thinking about from this scene or this section, which is really the rest of the movie, is the performances in it. So I want to see, what do you think of the performances? I'm incredibly taken with Jessica Chastain in this. I remember her being good the first time I watched it, but I think she's phenomenal as this mother, and there's so much unspoken just love pouring out for her children that you can just feel. And she's really energetic and vibrant as well. And she was kind of the centerpiece of this for me, even though she's not technically the protagonist. But I think Brad Pitt does a really great job as well. He's intimidating at moments, but also soft at other moments. And I think it paints a good picture of a person who contains multitudes, right? He's not just one, he's very multidimensional, I guess is what I'm getting at. And I think Brad Pitt does a good job with that in the performance. And the kid actors are all really good as well, including Jack, who he's got a pretty straight face for a lot of this. I think he does a good job in not betraying the emotions he's feeling, but at the same time, we can feel beneath the surface and we can understand what he's feeling in a lot of them as well. So I think that's a really a great performance from him as well. But yeah, yeah. You have any thoughts on the performers?
I thought the children did an incredible job. I was very impressed. The first time I saw the film, and like every time since, I've really been impressed. Hunter McCracken, I think, is the name of the actor who plays young Jack, and he is really, really good. I think Jessica Chastain is incredible in the film. I do feel as though Brad Pitt's character, Mr. O'Brien, seems to be, in a way, it feels like there's a lot of almost like a toxic masculinity going on. This like success, pushing his children for, you know, achieving, you know, I mean, the film opens up in some ways in the first few minutes by Jessica Chastain doing a voiceover, which voiceovers are very key and important in this film, where she is saying there's the way of nature and the way of grace, and kind of contrasting the two, and how the way of grace is about love and compassion and connection, where the way of nature is like selfish and like taking and trying to control.
Yeah, I have a quote actually on that really quick. That I really like. Yeah. Grace doesn't try to lease itself. It accepts being slighted, forgotten, disliked. It accepts insults and injuries. Anyway, I just noted that, and then thought I'd, and then also nature only wants to please itself.
Yeah, I think that's, I thought the performances by Jessica Chastain and Brad Pitt were very good. All around, the performances were really great. I did feel like Jessica Chastain's character, I wish we could have explored a little bit more her character, because it did seem like we are seeing this through memory of Sean Penn's character, the young Jack. And we are kind of seeing this idealization or romanticization of like a mother figure. And I think Jessica Chastain does a great job, but we still get moments at times of her, you know, the trouble and the heartache and the anguish that she experiences being married to this man who at times seems to want to be caring, but seems to suffer from a lot of shame. And I think there's several points in the film where he admits to putting his shame on his own children, and kind of like not really dealing with himself and just like applying it and projecting it outwards on them. And I think that's not great. And I kind of feel like I think it would have been good to maybe have some more Jessica Chastain and like more nuance to her character, because I do feel like it kind of trended towards maybe like too saintly or too like too much of like this saving grace or
where it's almost femininity, a mother versus like father, perfect. Angel on your shoulder, devil on your shoulder, feeling a little bit, maybe a little too simplistic.
Yeah, but I do think there was nuance in the portrayals by the two actors, Chastain and Brad Pitt, but I did feel like maybe that was something that could have been done a bit differently. But as far as the performances overall, really great, and I think the interactions and the dynamics between the children was incredible, but I'm sure we'll get to that. But I thought it was amazing to see some of those interactions by child actors that their limit, they're not speaking a lot. They're not really acting out in many ways. A lot of it is really contained in the body and the face, but there is the subtle expression that is moving.
Yeah. And that's, I think it's really well done. One moment that kind of, there's a lot of, unspoken things, like you're saying, in the body and the face. One scene that this is noted in that essay as well, but I caught it as well, that when he's gone for business, Brad Pitt has to leave for work, and the moment he's gone, there's just this like unspoken, again, just freedom and joy that the whole family's feeling. And I think Jessica Chastain doesn't want to put words to that, but she clearly feels it too, that this is when he's become a bit more domineering in the narrative, and suddenly with his presence gone, they are so happy and they're joyful and they're playing. And I think that maybe feeds into that overly simplistic feeling as well, but that you're mentioning, that she's all good and he's all bad in a sense. But I think that the performances are really well done. There's several moments in this when, there's a lot of voiceovers. Let's talk about the voiceovers, because several of them are, maybe all of them, are sort of, maybe they're prayers. So it seemed like to be several of them are directed at God. And some of those are really positive, and some are more negative. So here's one. This is Sean Penn's voiceover towards the beginning. He says, "You spoke to me through her. You spoke to me through the sky, the trees. Before I knew you, I loved you, believed in you. When did you first touch my heart?" And so, and also there's another one. This is Jessica Chastain. She says, "Love is smiling through all things." And so I think both of those are getting at this idea of seeing God in nature. And I think that's another reason to have this whole first section that's showing nature from the beginning. Kind of drawing that connection. And so, I think there are some interesting connections between the two. There's that, this is sort of just an aside, but we see the dinosaurs at one point, which is so surprising. And then later in the film, they're playing in a field and one of them picks up this really large bone, and he just kind of, as a joke or an aside, is, "I found a dinosaur bone," and then goes on. But immediately that connects in my brain. Oh, that this is the same universe that we saw at the beginning with the dinosaurs, but here we are. And the '50s. And so it kind of, I think there are some clever ways it kind of draws those together. But yeah, back to the voiceovers. So there are those really positive ones and really beautiful ones, but then as they're experiencing grief, there are some big questions as well. So, Jessica Chastain, someone says, "He's in God's hands now." This is not a prayer actually, but she says he was in God's hands the whole time. And then I think from there, there's a prayer that, is sort of questioning. And then young Jack also, when one of their friends in the neighborhood, he drowns, and they see him, they witness that. That's when he first kind of encounters the concept of death, and he kind of has some really big questions about that. And he has a prayer like that. That's, I'm trying to find, was he bad? He sort of questions the morality. Has this happened because he was bad? And then he imagines his mother dying, and he's afraid of that. And then he prays, "Where were you? You let a boy die. You let anything happen. How should I be good if you aren't?" And so in that you see him just working out morality, and like, if we all die, what's the point of life? Which again is another question this whole movie is asking. But then you also see him equating God with his own father, and sort of the, for lack of a better term, the daddy issues, and the way that often, I think this is pretty common, ties up with how we understand God is how we understand our earthly father, right? I think that's a common thing in Western Christianity. So his father is very harsh to him, and so then he starts to understand that maybe God is this way too. And so then you have him as an adult thinking through this and seeming to maybe break this idea down a little bit. And so I almost wonder if through this new grief that he's experiencing as an adult, he's reopening some of these same questions, and as he's remembering all these things and just asking these big questions. Anyway, that's a lot to say that I think the voiceovers are really key and are really moving.
Yeah, I think there's also a voiceover where he is praying that the that God would like let him die, like his dad or something. And there's there's a moment where he looks at a Jack holding up a car that his dad is working under, and he's looking almost as if he's a criminal up and down the street, as if he would potentially hit the Jack and let it drop. Mm-hmm. I think, quite a few feelings of shame that Jack is experiencing, and also this feeling of possibly wanting retribution. Mm-hmm. And his engagement with his mother later is sort of like, I'm not going to listen to you. You let him walk all over you. That's a kind of response of his. And it's this sense of wanting to act out. And at one point he yells at his dad when everyone's just playing, and says, I'm the one she loves, or something like that. So it's just out of nowhere. And it's this pent up frustration and anger and envy. And it's, I think, very well acted by Hunter McCracken. And I believe also for Malick, I think that from what I've read, that his brother died earlier in life. And this may have some personal connotations as well. And I think one of my favorite scenes is the interaction between Jack and his brother, the one who passed away, RL, I think. When his brother earlier in the film says, you know, I trust you. He's like, Jack is holding up like a lamp socket to him. Yeah. And his brother has, it looks like a wire clothes hanger, and is like unsure to stick it in or not. He does, and he's not harmed. And he's like, oh, okay, I trust you. Yeah. Later, a little bit later in the film, his brother Jack has a gun, and he is holding it, and he has his brother put his hand there, and then he shoots his hand, and his brother runs away. But there's this reconciliation where he's trying to like show in his own way by like holding up a fan and letting it blow on his brother, hey, I'm sorry, in some way, without saying it initially. Yeah. And his brother is looking at him, contemplating, like trying to see, like, I think maybe if he's sincere. And he eventually gives his brother this wooden 2x4 and is like, okay, you know, you can hit me if you want, basically for like retribution, which is probably what he would experience with his dad. Right. And his brother decides not to do that. And, you know, like pretends like he's going to hit them, and he just smiles. And then they have a moment later where his brother touches him on his head, and they're both kind of like crying and emotional. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very beautiful portrayal of probably brotherhood and family that really, I think, helped Jack as a character. Like, Sean Penn as an adult Jack going back and remembering those things, and some of his voiceover allude to that, like, what did you show me? And like, you know, trying to find his brother in some way in spirit. I thought that was very moving.
Yeah. I was going to bring that scene up too. I think it is a really powerful one, and it kind of gets at too. This movie shows kind of the cycles of abuse. Like, we see the anger that his father feels towards him, and then it starts coming out as he's breaking windows and he's sort of acting out in these ways. And we see him going from this sweet little boy to suddenly he's got this violence that he lets out in this anger. And it very clearly kind of coming from his father and the way he's treated by his father. And then this scene that you just mentioned, it almost is like showing how grace can break those cycles. And I thought that was a really, just a beautiful picture of that, because it starts out with that same kind of violence, and but in the end they reconcile, and it's just really beautiful. I really like that about it. And also, the film also shows that we see the marital fighting between his parents, but then there's the neighbors clearly are having marital disputes as well. Mm. And so you kind of get a sense, just hints at the fact that this is a bigger issue, and that this sort of toxic masculinity that he's experiencing and then learning is really widespread at this point. And, you know, it still is. So I think in an interesting way, it sort of pushes against that as well. And it shows the harm of that. So yeah, I really like that about it as well. Let's see. I did want to talk about the endings. Maybe we can go ahead and go there, really quickly. Actually, first, just, this is back on some of the imagery. There's a really amazing, just a throwaway moment almost. It's really brief, but it's when Jack is being born, and it shows, pregnant mom, and you kind of understand that's what's happening. And then it cuts to this this, again, it's like this beautiful nature shot, but it's underwater. It's this like bedroom underwater, and you see a child like swim out of it. And I was like, what was that? And then I realized, I think this was depicting birth. Like that was his little room in the womb. And then he's swimming out in this underwater, and it's just this faceless child. I thought what a beautiful poetic way to show what childbirth is like, as he has this comfortable room and has to leave. So just again, getting at the beginnings of things and the endings of things. I thought that was just a beautiful moment. So anyway, yeah, back to the ending, which again has some really beautiful imagery. What do you make of the ending? Because it ends up with Sean Penn again, and he's clearly feeling a lot of these, just a lot of big feelings and big questions as he's thinking about all of this. And then it's, it shows him first in like a desert area, with his younger self. And, I thought that was a cool way to show that he's sort of wrestling with his inner child or something, and feeling, the duality of, who he was then and who he is now, and questioning all of that. But then the big ending is on this beach, and or almost like a sandbar or something. It's really beautiful, and he's walking, and so are, it seems like everyone he's ever known are walking alongside him and interacting. And I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. It's really evocative and emotional, but it's kind of unclear as well. So do you have any thoughts on how this movie ties together at the end there?
I think it's an interesting portrayal of an inner life, and mm-hmm. this in some way, yeah, a reconciliation of potentially this way of grace that he's going back to, or mm-hmm. that he wants to embrace again, mm-hmm. and kind of maybe reconciling in himself his relationships with people of the past, those who have died, those mm-hmm. who may still be present, but definitely his own past with his family. And trying to, create a life anew, a new way of being for himself, or, you know, hearkening back to maybe his childhood before maybe the turn towards what we see as maybe his way of going towards, in the film, what's considered nature. Mm. I think it may be a reconciling and a balance, or maybe not a balance, but a moving towards grace. And by doing so in himself, it feels like a reuniting, because at this time I would think that his brother is dead. I'm not sure if his mother had died at that point. I know he spoke on the phone with his father when he's in the Jack's Sean Penn's character is in the tower, but from the age, I mean, just from the time period, his father's probably very, very old and possibly could be dying at any point, I would guess. He probably would be in his 70s or 80s at that point. So, for me, it feels like a movement back towards wholeness. And like you said, this working through with his inner self and his inner child, the wounds, but now kind of seeking solace and joy in the miracles of living, like the miracles of being. Mm. Which I think are shown throughout the film in different ways in his memory, but also in these cuts to nature and the cosmos. Mm-hmm. It's kind of seen anew, I think.
Yeah, I like that. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I just had thought that it, you know, it's in his head and clearly, and maybe he's, as he's looking back, he's just realizing the influence that all the people around him had on him. And so maybe it was some sort of way to visualize, sort of walking along the journey and the journey of life or something, and the people with him. And, both can be true, and you can kind of make your own meaning out of something like that. And I think that's a really great thing. But yeah, it's a moving ending. I think it's really beautiful and ends again with just beautiful shots of, this kind of watery beach area that's it's just really gorgeous, and everyone's in kind of mostly dressed in white and kind of lighter colors, I think. And it's a really striking kind of final segment.
Right. I think others have said that, you know, there's an interpretation I can see it where it seems to be almost like the resurrection slash the I'm not sure the terminology, but like reunion in heaven at some point, like after death, mm-hmm. because yeah. we do see images of like passing through doorways, people in the ground, and then people reaching up out of a grave, it seems like, to be resurrected or like renewed. So I, you know, there is that kind of renewal. For me, it seems to be more in the head and kind of in a sense of reaching in his own psyche and his own memory and being, but I could see that as well. And it is very poetic and open to interpretation, I think, much of these sequences in the film, which allows, the viewer to bring what they have in their own experiences or their own belief systems to the film. So I like that.
Yeah. And I guess it's sort of related to that, just the kind of the spiritual nature of this. It really does, because it's so big in its scope, but also so, humanistic. It's kind of a word I used in a previous movie, life affirming, that it's showing the beauty in, most of the things that it's depicting. But I think it really does cause you to kind of pause and reflect and have, I don't know, existential thoughts about things. And I think the style of it, it really invites you to do that. The way that it is almost feels like a documentary, and it's kind of told in snippets. It feels, in a way, it feels hyper-realistic. I mean, it's certainly the closest I can probably ever get to witnessing what did the Big Bang look like? What did the beginning of the planet Earth look like? It's probably the closest I can get to something like that. And so I think it is inviting you to ask big questions and explore those things. But at the same time, it's really, I think, hopeful. And it doesn't, if there are movies I've seen that ask big questions and the answers are scary, but I think that they ask existential questions, or they question, I think about some Coen brothers films just feeling really nihilistic in the ending. Like, what's the, it's actually also kind of parallels Job. I'm trying to think the name of the film, but A Serious Man. That movie seems so nihilistic and pointing to the fact that life is pointless. I really like that movie. But I think it kind of stands against something like this that I don't know much about Terrence Malick, but it would appear that he believes in God or believes in some sort of spirituality that that there's beauty in. So anyway, I think I really like that about the movie as well. And that might be a good transition into talking about Malick. So as I mentioned, I've only seen one other film, which was The New World, which tells us about Pocahontas and John Smith. And my memory of that film is, it's somewhat vague, but I mean, I remember it feeling kind of dreamlike in some of the ways that it's shot and that sort of thing. So that might contribute to, like, I can't latch on to exactly what I remember from it. But I was going to say, what other Malick films have you seen, and what do you know about him as a filmmaker?
The same cinematographer, Emmanuel Lubezki, he did The New World as well with Malick. So maybe that's why you see the similarity. So I've seen Days of Heaven, The Thin Red Line, The New World, To the Wonder, Knight of Cups, and that is all. I stopped after that. Knight of Cups was a bit, I've also seen Badlands, I believe just one time. But yeah, I'm more familiar with Days of Heaven, Thin Red Line, Tree of Life, and I've seen To the Wonder, Knight of Cups, and The New World, but not as many times. Okay. From The Tree of Life onward, I feel like, as I mentioned, Malick is moving more with his voiceovers, these poetic sort of anti-gravity almost, like shots where, you know, there's a lot of swinging and whirling around. And the storytelling is less linear, and it's more elliptical and it's more difficult to, I think, get your hands on in ways. But obviously that's intentional, and I think it has some nice effects. But I feel like The Tree of Life did it very well. And then after Into the Wonder and Knight of Cups, it feels like it's, for me, it didn't resonate as much.
Yeah. That's what I've heard from other people too. Yeah.
Yeah. But prior to The Tree of Life, in his works with Badlands, Days of Heaven, The Thin Red Line, and The New World, I think these are all really great films. And with The Thin Red Line, Sean Penn is in that film as well, and it's set during the time of World War II. The performances from Nick Nolte to I'm losing track of actors' names here. Adrian Brody, I believe,
Yeah, so he's in the film, and they're just excellent performances. But Malick at this time is starting to use voiceover a little more than in Days of Heaven and Badlands. And the elements, which I think I wanted to mention, play a big role in The Tree of Life. Mm. Water, fire, earth, these things are, and wind are really having an importance in the film. The Jack and his brothers are like children, and at times in the film babies, and they're experiencing rain or sunlight, mm-hmm. or shadows, yeah. and it's really magical, and it's presented in this really beautiful, almost miraculous way. And the Thin Red Line, even among the jungle and war, these soldiers are experiencing, you know, I think the birds, the wildlife, the plants, the sky, in a miraculous way. The characters who are attuned to that. And the Thin Red Line sort of follows Jim Caviezel, who is, I think, probably the main character, the protagonist, or one of the protagonists in the film. He's seen the world in a different way than Sean Penn's character, who is his superior in the military, mm-hmm. who's like, okay, more of like a character similar to Brad Pitt's character, mm-hmm. in The Tree of Life, a bit more structured and disciplined and a bit rigid. And Jim's character is just wanting to connect with the indigenous population, be friendly to them, be kind, be considerate, and looking out for his fellow officer, but not in a way to just like kill people to protect their lives, but like mm-hmm. actually concerned about their emotional welfare. And I think Malick from The Thin Red Line onwards is also engaged with more voiceover and more elements. Like the weather and setting and atmosphere really play a massive part in The New World, The Tree of Life, and going forward. And Days of Heaven does that as well. But Days of Heaven feels a bit more linear in a way, and mm-hmm. feels a bit more straightforward in its approach. But I think it's a great, Days of Heaven is a great film. And it's very, very beautiful. There's these beautiful crops, and you have this like old kind of, I'm not sure if it's Victorian home, in the middle of this field. And there is a massive brush fire that happens in the film. And it's one of the most stunning sequences I can remember, just as far as landscapes being shot in a film, a fictional film. It's incredible. But the elements, I think, are really important for Malick. And I think he does a really good job with him in The Tree of Life to show the miraculous and the beauty of just what a lot of times we take for granted in our weather. So. Hmm.
Revisiting this has made me realize like Malick is a filmmaker I really need to dig more into, and that tracks with what I've heard about, you know, since Tree of Life. His films have not been as favored perhaps as the ones before mm-hmm. that, although my understanding is that last year's A Hidden Life is supposed to be very, very good, which,
yes, I need to see.
I have not yet seen, obviously, but it's about a conscientious objector, if I can pronounce that word right, he's objecting to Nazism. So that sounds pretty compelling, and I really like to watch that. But
I think the ending image, I think the last scene we see before the flame, or the kind of like luminous object or light, is we see a bridge at the end of the film. And I believe Kent Jones from the essay you were talking about, says it's in New York, going from Staten Island to Manhattan, I believe, or maybe Staten Island to Brooklyn. I can't remember. That image of connecting, the here and there, and like you and me, and that idea of like the bridge to another person and outside oneself is very powerful. And I think that's what is shown, in The Way of Grace that's being presented, mm-hmm. that I think that Jack, the character, is actually finally coming back to and wanting to embrace this mm-hmm. way of grace that allows one to bridge the gap between oneself and the other. Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really powerful. And in ways it may have to do with like Malick's study. I think he originally studied philosophy and before he got into filmmaking. And the work of Heidegger and Kierkegaard are important to him. Kierkegaard being, I think, a very important philosopher and writer for some Christian thinkers in the 20th century. And Heidegger exploring being and like being in the world. And it feels like this is really present in his work.
this, the kind of saving grace, this like miraculousness of life, the different ways of being in life. And I think it's very transcendent. His focus is personalized, but as you said earlier, it's also placing the personal within like a larger framework and like moving in and out of perspectives from subject to object, and then also transcending probably both, or like in creating film to like in these stories and these images to like transcend just like a personal narrative or like a more outside, just kind of objective perspective. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And that final image kind of maybe hints that Jack had kind of closed himself off from other people, maybe because of his father and his upbringing. And this experience is opening him back up to those connections, to building those bridges. That's really a great way to think about that ending, I think. Well, cool. Well, this is our final film of season 4. And so I thought we might just look back at a little bit, just briefly, to say, do we have a favorite from the list? Do we have anything that stuck out this time, since you'd seen all these before? Anything that stuck out to you viewing them this time, or maybe viewing them in this group? So here's the films we've watched over the last several weeks. We started with Ozu's Tokyo Story, and then we looked at Bergman's The Seventh Seal, and then Stalker from Andrei Tarkovsky, and then Vagabond from Agnes Varda. Then last time was Three Colors Blue from Kieslowski, and of course this time was The Tree of Life from Terrence Malick. If I'm looking at this list, I think so. The Tree of Life is one that I had felt the most connected to before, and it came out as, you know, this is the one I still probably feel had the most I don't know, emotional connection to, or something like that. I don't know, favorite is probably not the right word exactly, but and I think that probably also has something to do with the fact that Malick is an American director and he's depicting American culture, and there's some familiarity there that my consciousness can kind of latch onto maybe a little better than some of the other cultural settings. But at the same time, I think one of my favorite things has been looking at all these different cultures and seeing the family dynamics in 1950s Tokyo are not that different than the family dynamics that I grew up with, or still am experiencing with grown parents, that sort of thing. Or looking at Bergman, and we talked about, you know, he made this in the 50s, Seventh Seal, but set it, probably smartly, set it back in medieval times to point to the fact that these questions about death and these big things they're asking are kind of universal, and the questions about God and that sort of thing. So I think through all of these, and I think probably setting wise, the other that has the most strong sense of the culture that it's a part of is Vagabond for me, and seeing like the French countryside and seeing so many French people, and it does have those documentary touches that, you know, these are, in a sense, these are real people that she has on camera. So anyway, I think yeah, for me, it's been the multicultural aspect of it has been maybe my favorite thing about watching all of these and seeing the different universal things, but also the idiosyncratic things of other cultures, and kind of thinking about all of those things, but also the big questions that some of these films kind of return to. I think Bergman very obviously deals with God and questions about humanity and death and life, and then Malick doing a very similar thing in Tree of Life, but again in a very different way. And then Stalker, I think, also getting at some of those big existential questions that I don't know, Stalker might be the most memorable actually from this group, just because it is such a unique film. But anyway, yeah, those are sort of my rambling thoughts about all these movies. I'm so glad to have watched all of these and to have talked through them. I always have a feeling that I don't want to just watch a movie and let it pass away in my brain, especially movies that are as rich as these. So I think podcasting through them and doing a little research around that helps them for me to stick. And so I really appreciate you, Andrew, doing that with me. And I hope that it's been similarly meaningful for people listening and for you as well. But yeah, what do you think about the season as a whole?
Well, thank you, Andrew. Yeah, I've really enjoyed watching these films and discussing them and speaking about them with you. I think one of the takeaways that stands out to me most is that these are all films that I really, really am moved by, that I think have great lasting impact and have a rewatchability. I could go back to these films in future years and future decades of my life and gain more perspective from them. I agree with you that I think many like universal themes are presented, and I think they're done in very honest ways by the directors that allow the audience member to engage with the films as they want, to bring their own personal experiences, thoughts, and beliefs and feelings to these films, and to not be always pushed in a direction of, okay, now we're going from point A to point B, and here's how we're going to do it, and I want you to feel this. Right. I feel like each of these films is much more open to the personal kind of interpretation and engagement that the audience member wants to focus on or involve themselves with. And I found that all of these films has moved me very much. I think Tokyo Story is the film that resonates in a deep way with me. And I think that maybe also because the grandmother and grandfather figure, I don't have any of my grandparents left alive. And they were in different ways big parts of my life. And seeing this older couple with children and grandchildren, and like, unbeknownst to them, like going towards the end of their life or one of their lives, is a really heartbreaking, but also a very moving and evocative image of like just the everydayness of life and the minutia of things can hold great value and meaning and purpose, and the simplicity that Ozu works in his compositions, even though I think they're rich, they are consistent, and he has like a minimal style in many ways. I think that does really well to me to just kind of almost in a raw way just open me up to what is actually happening to these people and the sensitivity that he approaches the films with. I think all these filmmakers are wonderful, and I recommend their works to everybody. And I hope, as well as you said, that people have enjoyed kind of going on this adventure with us. And it's been really rewarding for me. I actually turned 30 recently, so it's coming to these films again after sometimes many years. I'm really happy that they still move me in new ways and help me see the world in, I think, a more a reflective way that I think without films like this, I don't know where I would get that perspective, because some of these, I mean, Malick is an American filmmaker, but he's, you know, I think he was born in the probably 40s or 50s, and he is a very different life and perspective than myself. And to see that is really rewarding. And to see Agnès Varda, a female French filmmaker who died just, I believe, a couple of years ago. And as you said, in the French countryside, just showing a really, in a way, devastating, but just true and beautiful work in Vagabond of, it's breathtaking. And I think cinema can bring up these universal questions that even if it can be, the cultures are different and things are different and the questions can be different. And the experiences definitely individually from these people are lived differently than how we live them here. But they are hearkening back to a shared common human experience, I think, that there are some commonalities that we can work on. And if us as an audience can, you know, come to the films like these in a way where we want to engage, we want to work, and we want to be present and to pay attention and to bring our own experiences, I think these films can be very rewarding and beneficial for years. And in ways, like, I think great books can, you know, shape one's perspectives or make you question things anew, or just provide, you know, some lasting pleasure even in just viewing them.
Yeah, I like all those things you said. And there's some Mark Twain quote, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's basically about the best way to like feel empathy for other people is to travel and to like see other cultures and experience different types of humanity from your own. I think this is the next best thing is watching movies from other cultures, because it's more than even like reading a novel or any other kind of artwork. You are seeing the people in these cultures and seeing those commonalities. That's something I keep coming back to. I mean, from the beginning of this podcast, I've said this many times, but watching the films from other cultural contexts and other time periods, always brings me back to that shared humanity that you're talking about. And it strikes me too, I think Tokyo Story, it's sort of maybe a nice opening to the Tree of Life's ending in that they both set up sort of a dichotomy. It's a little more subtle. I mean, it's pretty subtle in both of them, but thinking about the bridge and, you know, maybe he's closed himself off, but he's Jack is learning to reopen those bridges to other people. In Tokyo Story, there's that moving scene at the end where the youngest daughter is complaining that her siblings have not been as kind or gracious to their parents in their old age. And she says, the response is, you know, that's how everyone is, you know, that they have their own mm-hmm. lives. And so it's almost like, you know, if the choice is most people are selfish to some degree, but you can make a choice to be something different. And so anyway, just seeing that kind of two ways of living, maybe that may be, again, a simple way to look at it, but I think that's an interesting parallel to the Tree of Life. But it also strikes me, I think that something we've said, a word that we've brought up with almost all of these is poetic, and thinking about the poetic connections you can make and the poetic imagery, and like, as you were mentioning, like the openness with which you can interpret these. We almost could have called this season poetic cinema, and I think because all these have fit into that so nicely. But anyway, yeah, it's been a real joy, and I'm excited for the next season. I definitely want to have you back for another season. I do have some tentative plans for the following season of the podcast. I won't announce those just yet because it's not quite set in stone. But anyway, the point is I definitely want to have you back again for another season, Andrew. I've really, really enjoyed our discussions.
I've enjoyed it as well. Thank you so much, Andrew. And I think a parting thing I will say here is that to kind of continue with what you were saying, I wanted to say and add on to it that these sort of films also, I think, in this day and age, like what we live in and all the the difficulties that we're seeing in the world with tensions between groups of people, between the government and the citizens, everything going on, to engage in cinema that helps bridge the gap between us and others is really, really important. And I think that art has a role and a place of really helping connect and create empathy and compassion for people who are, in some ways we perceive them to be potentially very different than us, but be that the case or not, it doesn't really matter. There is a shared commonality of life and being human. And I think these films from different cultures explore that. And if we're sensitive to that, I think there's a lot to learn and a lot to enjoy. So I think they have use in a practical way as well for just trying to open one's heart to others.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to end out the season. Thank you for being here for all of that. And I think that's, a beautiful sentiment. And I think that's so true of cinema as an empathy machine. That's a famous quote from some filmmaker. And I think these films definitely embody that idea too. Well, we will say goodbye then to Andrew and close out season four. Thank you again so much for being here, Andrew.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. It was a pleasure. Thanks.
If you want to support Arthouse Garage, you can leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you're using. And you can keep up with Arthouse Garage on the social media. We are at Arthouse Garage just about everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Letterboxd. You can also find video reviews on YouTube and reviews and event coverage on the blog at arthousegarage.com. You can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com, with any feedback. And thank you so much for listening. That will do it for this episode. And until next time, keep it snob free.